Our next story is about dinosaur eggs in an unusual place. And to tell us more about this and other findings, Elsa Youngstead joins me from North Carolina. Elsa is a regular guest on the podcast, and she joins me on most weeks with her favorite science stories. Hi, Elsa.
Hi, Ritu.
So tell us, where did the scientists find these clusters of fossilized dinosaur eggs?
They found them in northwest Argentina, clustered around what used to be hydrothermal vents and geysers that existed during the Cretaceous.
So very hot or warm places.
Right, hot, steamy places. And it looks like they were specifically laying their eggs near these vents, and that the vents would have helped keep the eggs warm and moist, in good conditions for incubation.
I wonder, how common was this practice?
This is the first place that this has been found. So who knows? There is at least one bird species that exists today that does this in Polynesia, that lays its eggs in places that will be warmed volcanically. But this is the first time anybody has really gotten any good data about why a dinosaur might lay its eggs anywhere.
I've often wondered how these giant dinosaurs, like, say, Tyrannosaurus Rex, ever incubated their eggs, because I can't imagine them really sitting on the eggs and the eggs surviving.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. Yeah, these eggs are most likely, they don't know what species of dinosaur they came from, but they think it's some sort of giant sauropod, one of the big herbivores.
Fascinating finding. I wonder if they're going to find more evidence of such behavior among other dinosaur species. Well, our next story is about a topic that we covered a couple weeks ago in the podcast, organic food. So researchers have some good news about how organic farming practices can impact the local biodiversity.
Right. This new result comes from potato fields in Washington, and researchers have found a way that organic farming does augment the biodiversity of insects living in crops, beneficial insects, and how that actually helps to control the pests on that crop.
And what were they looking at, and what did they find?
Well, they were looking at what's called species evenness. So when ecologists talk about biodiversity, they're talking about two things, the number of species and then also the relative abundance of those various species. So if all of the species are close to equally abundant, there's more species evenness. If you have the same number of species, but one or two of them are really common and the rest are rare, that's a low degree of evenness.
And so a high degree of evenness is something that's good, I take it.
Yeah, they were looking at the predatory insects that could potentially control the pest, the Colorado potato beetle. And in the organic fields, the predatory insects had similar numbers of species, but they had a higher species evenness. So the idea is that by removing the synthetic broad-spectrum pesticides from the picture, they're really allowing the natural enemies to do their job better, which results in better potato beetle control and bigger potato plants.
I see.
And they think the reason that a high degree of species evenness is good is that these different predator species probably hang out on different parts of the plant, and so there's fewer places for the pest beetles to go hide out.
And how do they know that this isn't just one case?
Well, they did look into that. They did a survey of other studies that looked at species evenness in organic versus conventional farms, and just on average, they did find that species evenness was higher in organic fields.
Still, this doesn't mean that organic farming practices are always beneficial. There can be cases that it may not be as good on biodiversity as in this case. That's the finding of this other study that came out recently.
Yeah, this other study that's also out this week, they looked at six different pesticides, two organic ones, a fungus and mineral oil, and then four synthetic chemicals that are used to control soybean aphids. And in this case, the two organic pesticides that they tested didn't really come out looking that great.
And why is that?
Well, first of all, they weren't even that good at controlling the aphids. Like, the yield from those crops wasn't really better than if they were just completely untreated. And then these particular organic pesticides also did tend to hurt the natural enemies of the aphids. So it was doing sort of the opposite thing that we saw in the previous study.
So how is a farmer supposed to decide what kind of organic practice is going to be better, or how is a consumer supposed to decide how truly organic and environmentally friendly a particular crop might be.
These authors of this paper are arguing that people need to look at the end result and what environmental impact these compounds really are having. So they're advocating looking for the lowest impact chemical rather than always, always, always avoiding synthetic compounds. Although something that I wondered that they didn't look at in this study is about the impacts of manufacturing some of these compounds. I have no idea, but I would imagine that some of the petroleum-based or synthetic compounds have other costs.
Some are more water-intensive, some are more energy-intensive.
Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious to see the entire life cycle.
Sure. But I have to say, the more some of these studies come out, the more confused I am. And I feel like when I walk into a grocery store, I have to be really armed with a lot of data on, you know, what's high impact, what's low impact.
Yeah, that's why you hope that, like, the regulatory system will take some of these things into account so that you don't have to go in and cross-examine every single product yourself.
Exactly. Well, let's hope that happens sometime soon. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you as always, Elsa. Thanks for taking the time.
All right. Thanks, Ritu.